calling the planning meeting to order. 5:30, established forum.
Mary Hatfield, present.
John Cameron.
Ray Myers, present.
Russ Smith, present. We have a call.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That is. No.
I was going to say the change of that was not here.
Who made the motion, I'm sorry?
I made the motion.
Okay, we are now.
Hearings for the quadrant plan and subdivision plans. If you want to open subdivision as well, that'd be great.
We will also open subdivision 02-UB-19 at the same time and still leave the staff report.
All right. Thank you all. Bear with us. We've got a lot of information. It could be a long night. And I've been told that my meetings aren't riveting, so apologies in advance. But you do have a pretty cool development before you, so hopefully that's exciting enough. I will start with the quasi-judicial hearing script that I'm required to read. If there are any questions, please do ask me. The planning commission, as the hearings body, will hear the argument concerning the application of 01-QP-19 and 02-SUB-19. This is the Sagebrush property, quadrant plan and subdivision. The applicant is requesting approval of a quadrant plan and subdivision, and the applicant is Sagebrush LLC, Sagebrush Development LLC. All testimony shall be directed to the hearings body, it's the planning commission. The applicable substantive criteria are listed in the staff report, and they will be in the presentation. All testimony, argument, and evidence must be directed to the applicable criteria or other criteria in a comprehensive plan or zoning ordinance you believe to be applicable. At the conclusion of this hearing, the hearings body will deliberate towards a decision or continue the hearing or deliberations to a time and date certain. Failure on the part of any person to raise an issue with sufficient specificity to afford the planning commission and the parties to this proceeding an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to city council and land use board of appeals on that issue. So if you have an issue, say it tonight with detail. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. The hearing will proceed as follows. Staff will provide a brief report. Applicant will present its testimony and evidence. Any interested persons will present testimony or evidence. Applicant, as the party bearing burden of proof, will then be afforded an opportunity to present rebuttal testimony. Opponent rebuttal may be allowed at the planning commission's discretion. If requested by the hearings body, staff will provide closing comments. And questions from or to the chair may be entertained at any time at the hearings body's discretion. And then the hearing will be closed should the planning commission decide to do that tonight. So at this point, commissioners must disclose any ex parte contacts, including site visits, prior hearings observations, biases, or conflicts of interest. That includes detailed conversations with the applicant or any advanced knowledge of the site or development. Does any commissioner have anything to disclose? And if so, please state the nature of same and whether you can proceed.
Yes, I have to recuse myself from the deliberations from this hearing because I have personal relationships with the applicants.
Does any party wish to challenge any member of the hearings body based on ex parte contacts, biases, or conflicts? Hearing none, I'm going to jump to the staff report. So I have thought about how was the best way to present this without taking the next 10 days. The applicant has a large team here that has put a lot of work into this. The city staff has met with the applicant numerous times. There are many, many details associated with this. Planning Commission has had the packet for about a week to study and can bring forward a lot of questions. I think what I'm going to do is go through a presentation outlining a couple of points. I do need to spend, I think, some decent time on a revised staff report that just came out this afternoon. The commission got it when they showed up here. So it is probably 80 pages and they just got it. What I'm going to do though is just go through it partway through the presentation and go through all the changes and just highlight the changes as briefly as I can. But I want everybody to be aware of what they are, including the applicant, because I know the applicant also only got it about 45 minutes ago. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the presentation. I have an issue with this.
I can forward it for you if you want.
Oh, let's see. Okay, so as you can see, there's a lot of review criteria, which is why this document is so large. There's a lot of things to respond to. There's the zoning district. There's also an overlay zone. This is within the residential neighborhood, residential master plan overlay area for the Newbury neighborhood. There are development standards, there's procedures, and there's specific requirements for land division. So those are all listed there. Again, they're also in the staff report. Process and notices were followed according to procedure, mailed to property owners within 250 feet, which is actually an increased radius from the required 100 feet. It was advertised in newspapers, website, regular locations around town, and here we are at the hearing. After approval, should this be approved, the next steps include meeting the conditions of approval at various times, as you'll see later. Construction plans will be submitted to the city for review and approval. Pre-construction meeting will occur, and then the construction and phases can occur, or bonding of certain public improvements if approved. And then they can file a final plat. Again, it'll be a phased project, and we'll go through that. All right, that's a proposal for 192-lot subdivision in four residential phases. I realize you can't see the details of this map, but the applicant does have a board, and I think it's in your packet as well. The pink dotted lines are the phases. So it's the four residential phases, which are all these here where you see the lots on them. And then there's two proposed commercial phases. The lot sizes range from just over 5,000 square feet to just under 10,000 square feet. It's largely zoned residential master plan and mixed use commercial following the recent rezone and comp plan amendment that went through a planning commission a few months ago. Just to show the phases, the first residential phase is shown in this area, phase two, phase three, and phase four. And those are all outlined in more detail in the map that you can see up close in your packet. The closer version, we'll come back to that, but I just wanted to have that available for us to go back and forth with. And I will note that the applicant has submitted a revised plan since this presentation was put together. So there are some refinements that they can talk about in their portion of the presentation. So before I jump into some more of those details, I do want to jump over the staff report, the revised one that was in your stack today. And I will just, I think, call out the page number with the changes. So I'll start with page two. Page two, I just added an introduction. So none of that should really be new information, just introducing the project, talking about the number of lots, four phases, two commercial phases that we just mentioned. I do highlight in here, I think what is probably the main disagreement between staff and applicant in this application that I'm guessing will probably be the bulk of the conversation tonight, and that is related to the extension of the easternmost roadway, being this roadway here, and I'll get into that in a moment. But the staff conditions do require or recommend to Planning Commission, you all, the decision body, but staff recommends that this be extended to the south to Victory and the northern end be extended to the north to Caldwell. And in this introduction, I highlight the reasons that staff is requesting that. And I'm going to go ahead and note those now because I probably won't come back to them in detail later. The first one is to meet the intent of the Newbury Neighborhood Planning Area Overlay Zone street mapping. I am going to show this figure momentarily, so we'll get back to that. Second one is to meet the two and three requirements of the city's public works development provision standards. Third, to meet future street extensions requirements that are in the Lapine Development Code 15.90.070, which is in your staff report. Fourth, to provide adequate public facilities, and by doing that, to rely on the public work standards as to what considers adequate, which gets back to that two and three requirement. To meet criterion 10 of 15.406.010, to provide access to abundant properties for future development. I'm going to point these out as we go through this revised staff report as well. I'm also going to make a note in the presentation about Campfire Drive, which is the final bullet in that introduction. I'm going to continue flipping through to changes. Most of the changes were not game changers and not swaying position. I was just adding some more detail and clarification. Page 11, this was something that the applicant brought up and staff agreed with. It's regarding the multi-use path and the allowance for the multi-use path to be within the Highway 97 right-of-way should ODOT approve that. The original staff report referenced that that needed to be taken care of before any construction or platting occurred. In fact, quadrant 1A, phase 1, really is already bounded by Crescent Creek Drive. What happens over here does not impact this development. So staff is very comfortable just saying that before construction or platting occurs in these two quadrants, the city needs to receive documentation from ODOT and from the applicant that that path is acceptable in their right of way. So I just added that clarification. On page 12, just added a little bit to the finding here, referring to, this is a section talking about collector streets needing to be designed to collector standards, and it just is more specific on which streets are designed as collectors and which streets. For example, in this case, Campfire Drive, which you'll see later in the presentation, is proposed to meet local street standards. So that's just a clarification, doesn't affect the substance. Page 15, it's a little hard to see. You see a mid-page, a line on the left-hand side under E. This is relating to this third park. Staff felt important to have this park conditioned to a specific house in that development so that, you know, many years down the road, say this is getting built and then the park doesn't get built. It's easy when you've got another phase coming up, but when you don't have another phase coming up to condition it to, we condition it to initially the fifth lot. The applicant asked if we would consider the 25th lot, which is about halfway through that phase, and we thought that was very reasonable. So updated 5th to 25th. Page 16 is the same clarification on that path and the timing of the path that I mentioned. Page 19, this is the section where it talks about the streets proposed in the quadrant. Transportation plan conform to the general location and connection requirements of Lapine neighborhood street plan. I'm going to show you this figure in a moment. In fact, why don't I just, I'm going to advance to it now. One more. Okay, so this page 19 refers to this figure 15. This figure 15 is a carryover as much of Lapine code was. This was a figure within the Deschutes County Code. The Newberry Neighborhood Plan refers to this figure and refers to it for, particularly for street design and layout. Admittedly, this has been repealed from the Deschutes County Code. However, it's still referenced in the Lapine Code. So the Lapine staff position is that it's still referenced in the Lapine Code. It was not removed from it, so it is still one of our only references for what the streets are supposed to look like in this area. So this addition on page 19 just addresses this figure 15 in particular, noting that and adds this figure 15 to the staff report. Although figure 15 is no longer part of the Deschutes County Comprehensive Plan, staff finds that this criterion adopted figure 15 by reference, and thus remains applicable for development within the Newbury neighborhood. As shown in the figure, the easternmost north-south roadway that parallels Highway 97, and it's talking about this one right here, connects from Victory Way to a future road just south of Burgess. So it connects down here at Victory, and it connects up here at a road parallel to Burgess. The proposed tentative plan does not include the extension of this roadway to the northern or southern property lines. However, a western perimeter collector does directly connect to Burgess. This requirement can be met with the condition of approval that the street can be extended, should be extended to and through to the subject property, create connections at Victory Way to Caldwell Drive. Moving on. Page 25, that was just a typo in the applicant's report. We fixed it to not say northbound, but rather southbound. That's related to the left turn lanes at Huntington and Memorial. So the traffic report proposed installation of a new southbound left turn lane at Huntington and Memorial. That's what that's referring to. Page 32, regarding the septic tank, this is just a clarification on the portion that the property owner is responsible for. It's just removed some language. The new city ordinance requires that the property owner is responsible for the sewer, or the septic and the sewer from the outlet of the tank to the building. The city is responsible from the outlet of the tank to the main and beyond.
So you're going to be on the front yard?
I think generally, but not necessarily, if it doesn't work. I think that the city engineer has been flexible on where it's cited, but generally I think it is, yeah. All right, page 34. These are just some clarifications that the applicant pointed out and staff agreed with. Undergrounding utility is in regards to new utilities, so that's just adding that clarification. It's new utilities. All right, page 36. Added a paragraph regarding ODOT comments. We did receive an email yesterday from ODOT noting the acceptance of the applicant's traffic analysis, also noting that they have remaining question as to how ODOT would like to handle the mitigation at Highway 97 and Burgess. The traffic analysis, and I'm sure the applicant will talk about this more in detail, but the traffic analysis showed that the increase in traffic did increase the queue length at the left turn at Highway 97 and Burgess, which we know is an issue today. If it's failing today, it's certainly failing in the future without mitigation. So ODOT commented that yes, they would like mitigation, but there was really no specific mitigation that was requested. I received a phone call today from ODOT requesting that the applicant provide mitigation for the impact at 97 Burgess attributable to the development. At this point, neither ODOT nor the city have any specific plans for improvement of this intersection. Staff notes that ODOT is undertaking, with the city's participation, a refinement plan in this area, which is intended to identify specific mitigations at this location. However, without specific improvement planned or readily identifiable improvements, the city cannot determine the applicant's proportionate share at the properly impose a financial exaction at this time. So essentially, I wanted to capture in this the situation we're in. ODOT wants a mitigation, but we don't know what mitigation it is. We don't know what the proportional share is. So city is not able to impose any sort of exaction. So the staff report does not include a condition of approval requiring the applicant to contribute at this point in time.
That's still an ongoing discussion with ODOT.
That is additional, since this was hot off the press at 4 o'clock. The follow-on was the ODOT has requested that the record remain open. We can talk about that at the end of the evening here, because they would like to continue that conversation. The applicant may have some more information than I do. It's been back and forth all day since 5:30 this morning, so it continues to go. All right, I'm going to skip over any edits that are ones I've addressed before that are duplicative. The initial staff report noted that the city engineer has the ability to waive curb standards and curb requirements. This one solidifies it a little bit firmer to say that the city engineer has approved streets without curbs, and that the applicant just needs to submit their designs accordingly, detailing the swales and stormwater retention ability of the swales. Page 46 talks about block length. The map, the...
This one?
Further up, the one that's just the colored map.
Oh.
Up towards the top. Yeah, back.
Oh.
Right there. So block length, as I mentioned, this has been quite a detailed project. You've got an overlay zone, you've got the zone, you've got the development code. The development code has a standard block length requirement of 660 feet. The overlay zone has a requirement of 600 feet without pedestrian connections. The code then further says that the overlay zone trumps basically the development code. So looking at 600 feet, there's a definition here of block that we can debate if we need to later. Within the subdivision, with that 600 foot requirement, just looking at 600 foot street to street, there are several streets that don't appear to meet that. However, this quadrant really is bounded already. The streets are developed on Memorial, Crescent Creek, Caldwell. Staff does have the ability within this code to recommend some exceptions, and you have the ability to grant those. Staff's recommendation is that the exception to block length be granted here because they are including quite a number of pedestrian connections and those streets are already developed. Similarly, along this eastern edge, this is a very long block along this edge, but there's no development out here, there's no streets. Maybe someday there could be a connection, but not likely. It's probably more likely going to be one of the other larger streets that's not developed yet. So staff is also recommending an exception to block length on this edge, as long as a second pedestrian connection is provided so that you get close to 600 feet with that pedestrian connection. It still won't be quite 600 feet, but I think it meets the intent. And I understand there is some flexibility probably as of moving the one that's there around to make it work with the other ones a little bit better. And then the staff report, frankly, we're running out of time, just says that working with the applicant here to demonstrate block length on a few of these other legs and using some of those pedestrian connections, if we need to shift a few of them around to make it work a little bit better, that is the recommendation staff has, that we continue that conversation with them, demonstrate that a little bit more in the coming weeks. But again, for quadrant one, which I know is the one they want to start with right away, staff's recommendation is just to approve the block lengths as they are. 9, towards the bottom, this, I'm make sure I'm reading the right one. Yes, it's regarding the double, the double frontage lots, which there are quite a few, just because the way the neighborhood is, I think, laid out already. There's a number of double frontage lots here, a number of double frontage lots here. Double frontage meaning that there's a street on each side of the lot. And this requirement really is talking about ensuring that there aren't driveways coming out here on Crescent Creek, there aren't driveways at the same time coming out to the local street. And by doing a planting buffer along one side, that eliminates that possibility of a driveway coming out, and it increases the visual aesthetics and for the folks driving by as well as those living on the lots. In this case, Crescent Creek is already very wide and provides buffers on both sides. Staff is very comfortable with that. That would apply to these lots as well as these lots. The one lot that, one row of lots that staff was concerned about was this one out here, double frontage. This Victory Way is required to be extended, that there be some sort of a planting buffer, and it doesn't have to be more than 4 to 6 feet, according to code, but that is the recommendation there. All right, we're more than halfway through. Page 51, just added a note, I think this has been clear, but want to make it very clear that all parks are private with appropriate public access easements. Maintenance of the park shall be responsibility of the developer until which time the maintenance responsibility is transferred to an operational HOA. So the city is not taking these parks, nor is the parks district. Page 54 and 55, I'm not going to detail. This is just adding in the provisions that this is a type 3 quasi-judicial process. Expiration of approval, this is one worth noting, I think for the applicant as well. The code only allows us to go out 5 years for duration of approval. So staff is has noted in the staff report that the first phase needs to be constructed or at least initiated within 2 years and final platted. The remaining phases need to be within 5 years. However, the code does have allowances for extensions. It will expire in 5 years from the final date of this tentative plan approval unless an extension is properly applied for and granted. It does. Mm-hmm. So the remaining ones are duplicates, so I'm skipping them. All right, then there's a series of changes to conditions of approval. Again, not, I don't think, adding anything drastically new, just refining them. So I'm going to save those for the end of my staff report so we can do all the conditions of approval at one time, because I do want the applicant and as well as commission to understand what they are. So finish up the presentation. Water, just to recap, Public Works confirmed that there is water capacity. Final construction plans just have to be submitted to the city for review and approval. Sewer, largely, there are some sewer issues, largely there is sewer capacity. However, at about the second residential phase, the wet well at the Newbury pump station will be at capacity. So one of the conditions is that the applicant construct a new wet well prior to final plat approval of the second residential phase. Septic tanks need to be sited and approved during the building permit review, so we don't do that during land use. And again, final construction plans will be approved by the city. Transportation, these are just really high-level recaps. We've talked about them, but the current proposal includes the extension of Crescent Creek Drive and Memorial Lane. Conditions require extension also of Victory Way and Caldwell. Conditions also require the extension of easternmost North-South Street, the one paralleling 97, to Victory Way and Caldwell Drive. And the conditions include construction of a southbound left-turn lane at Huntington and Memorial. So a little more detail here on the extension to Caldwell. Again, the applicant does have a revised plan that doesn't fully extend the street, but does provide a fire access, and I'm sure they will present that tonight. And I would ask for the applicant, if anything new today, if you could go through it with the commission. We're here for the long haul and happy to do that, but they haven't had the opportunity to really digest it. So if you could take the time to go through it, it would be great. Traffic and plans. Back to this corner, this is that street paralleling Highway 97. The staff report requires or recommends to Planning Commission the extension of this street up to Caldwell with the construction of Caldwell. That does, as I mentioned before, it relates to a number of different code items. One of them being this map that has been the path for the Newbury planning area that shows the connection going through. A little more detail. I mentioned Campfire Drive earlier. This is a platted subdivision to the north. The subject property is right down here. So this is that intersection I was showing you before, where staff is recommending this to go through to the north. Currently, Campfire Drive is platted to the north, to the property line to the north, as well as to the property line to the south, connecting with Findlay Drive. And this would be the continuation of that road. Victory Way, in the south is right here. Staff report is also recommending extension of Victory Way down here in the extension of the easternmost road to Victory Way down here in this corner. Again, the applicant does have some revisions to the plan that they can show you. This is just a more zoomed out version. Bimart here, Victory Way ending here. We've got Housing Works up here and Habitat. The recommendation is extension of Victory Way to that Eastern West Roadway. All right, now we're at the proposed conditions of approval. There's quite a few. Do you want me to read through all of them at this point? Have you had time to? It's the new one.
How much change is that from the?
From the initial? Well, why don't I highlight the changes? And then if we need to, we can go back and discuss them. I do want to get to the applicant with time to discuss, because I know they've got some time constraints tonight too. Revision to number two, just noting that all lots must abut upon a public street other than an alley. That change was made only because the applicant did submit a revised plan today that I think achieves the intent of that, so didn't call out specific lots. Again, requiring all parks to be private with appropriate public access easements, with the maintenance responsibility of the developer until the HOA takes over. Number eight is referring to the block length conversation we had at the beginning of these changes, talking about this eastern block of homes parallel to 97, that staff recommends an exception of block length for obvious development reasons, but recommends that two pedestrian paths are provided along that area to link into the multi-use path. Number 10 talks about the phasing. As I mentioned, expires 5 years from tentative plan final decision date. Number 15 details that out a little bit more. I think Russ answering your question, the first residential phase needs to be plotted within 2 years of the decision becoming final. All other phases have 5 years, although again, there are allowances for extensions. A lot of the refinements in the conditions are to tie them to specific phases, because again, we don't want to tie up something that's for phase four. We don't want to tie the phase one for the sake of something in phase four. Applicant shall revise the plans to provide street or pedestrian access by at least every 600 feet on every block, designed as acceptable to the city. Noting that eastern row of homes is probably not going to be 600 feet, but it'll be reasonable. It'll be less than it is now. I think most of the other ones meet that already, but just want the applicant to confirm that. As noted, it includes all the conditions for the extension of that easternmost roadway to the north and south. I believe the applicant has addressed this as well, but there is a water line right here in the existing kind of gravel roadway that needs to be likely moved out of the back of the homes, home sites, which is, I think, what the applicant has responded they want to do, or what to have done as part of the construction. There is also a force main easement in the back of these properties that needs to be addressed prior to construction and platting. The applicant has noted that they would like to move that to the ODOT right away. There are some things that have to occur for that to happen, but those are addressed in the conditions as well. That would be phase two. Correct. Yeah, so it's tied to phase two.
You're going to have to worry about that.
We need to worry about all of it tonight. But it's all a package tonight. All the conditions for every phase are tonight. And we just want to make sure that we're not conditioning something on phase one that's required for phase four. So we've tried to specify that in here. Our changes are largely moving a couple of things around to be in a better place, but not changing content. And then finally addressing the 4 to 6 foot wide planting screening easement along the southern side of the Victory Way double frontage lots. So I'm happy to answer questions. There's a lot of details here. We can also turn it to the applicant to provide their testimony, and then I can answer more questions and get back into more detail after they speak, if you wish.
I think it'd be better if they have.
Come on down.
Okay. Pull that, or one, pull one, one set of plans from there to,
okay.
So that we can start with, we'll just go with that slide presentation.
Okay.
Was, and it will be needed though, so keep
okay.
it up there.
This one?
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Tammy's got it.
Tammy got it, okay.
Good work, Tammy.
It's the angle from where she's sitting.
From that angle, it might work.
Yeah.
From this angle, it might work.
Good evening. For the record, I'm Greg Blackmore, Blackmore Planning and Development Services. I'm here on behalf of Sagebrush Development, Russell's. Thanks for having us. It's been a long time coming. This project has been in the works for a very long time, and seeing the crowd here tonight, I think I'll take a little bit more time just reiterating where we've been and what we're proposing so that everybody knows it. This has been in the works for, we've been working on it for a long, long time. But to start out with, let's see. Okay. Next slide. There we go. So we have our full team here tonight. We have Vicki Russell and Randy Akasich, the owner applicant, myself. We have our land use attorney, Laura Kraska Cooper, is here. Our civil engineer, Grant Hardgraves. We have our traffic engineer, Joe Bestman, and our real estate brokers, Scott Asla, Zach. So as we work through this, if you have questions, hopefully we'll have answers for you. We have our full team here. We spent many, many hours working on it as our team, and also with city staff working through a number of these issues. And I would say got through most of them. So 99% of them. So thanks to staff, and it's been long also. But thanks to staff for your diligent efforts. Location, I think everybody knows the location. Next slide. So yeah, overall, there's 191 residential lots. Let's see, we have 6 acres of park, and there's also commercial mixed use development. Parks are integrated into each of the quadrants of the neighborhood, and there's a series of multi-use paths. Let's see if we can. There's paths that are proposed along all of the street frontages. There's paths that are proposed along all the street frontages. Additionally, multi-use path along Caldwell, the 10-foot wide multi-use path that take us from this multi-use path into the park, into the commercial area. And of course, the intent is to have nice single family homes around parks, neighborhood feel. And we've been working, as you know, the code really initially didn't allow for this design. And we had to go through an extensive, really get the code up just to par to allow for really any development because of all the old references. My 30,000 foot view, let's see. Can we go to the next slide? I think, yes. So other than me talk about the project, I think let's bring the owners and the developers up to talk about what their vision is and what their plan is before I get into them.
There we go.
Okay.
Oh.
PowerPoint.
I'm Vicki Russell, and I am a partner and owner of this property in Sagebrush Development. So we are owners and developers.
I'm Randy Akasich, project manager for the development.
So I'll start. We've been here before, so for the sake of our people that are here, we'll tell you this is a legacy project for Vic and I. This is something that we've owned the property for a very long time, and have wanted to develop something that would be a real asset to our community, something that 20 years from now is still a beautiful project, and provide for families, community, sense of community. And so that has been our goal from the beginning. We've spent many, many months doing a lot of research on what we wanted to do with this project. We took 100 homes out of the initial site that was developed in 2006 or platted in 2006 so we could have open space and we could provide an area for families to have parks and move around. So I'll start with this slide. The name of our project is the Reserve in the Pines.
Let me know when you're ready for the next slide.
Next slide.
Okay. Next slide. As you've heard, there are growing the lots. We took a lot out so we could have family playground possibly. There's room to be happy to move around with their children or grandchildren. In the overlay has what they call mixed use there in the Westmore Cascadia, living on an acre, living in an area. That's the concept of the first, the landscaping, the children's barbecue area up in the kind of chalk out.
I've done this before.
Just make sure that you raised your voice.
Because I don't know if everyone can really hear everything you're saying.
Can you hear everything?
No.
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Thank you for, okay. So as you can see, some of our concepts, these are the concepts for the park area that we have. So it'd be a great place to meet for families, friends, and to enjoy some of the open space. Next. So we want them to be livable, sustainable, and affordable in Lapine. One of the things about being affordable is you can have beautiful hire to live within the CCNRs. That doesn't mean if they're affordable. We're hoping on some of the smaller lots we have the opportunity to those homes so that they can live close to the schools, they can live couples especially, that's their dream. But again, that doesn't mean lack of quality. It means that hopefully we can get them into some affordable space. Any questions?
What are the plans that you guys see?
So Grant, didn't we have, they can't park up on Huntington.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah,
do
no,
you
they
see anywhere that shows where their parking would be?
They are, there's 85 parking spaces in there.
Isn't that correct?
Approximately, yeah.
And I will clarify that for the commercial portion of the project, they will have to go through a site plan review. So staff at a minimum will have the opportunity to review the fine details of that commercial lot.
It's just the question that comes to mind for me as I look at
this. To introduce myself, my name is Grant Hargrave. I'm a civil engineer at the firm HWA, part of the design team. Kind of just to reiterate what Cammie just mentioned, you know, the application for you tonight is not for the commercial development. You know, this is just the subdivision to create the future application to come in and actually show you what the buildings would look like, where they would be in the parking. The general idea, I think he does have this here. The first concept we've had would be that the buildings would more or less be close to Huntington, creating a nice streetscape similar to one you saw in the slide. And that the parking would be in the back, kind of between the residential lots and the commercial building. That's the general concept that these lots are intended to some. Again, it's really not technically part of the application tonight, but the idea of this concept would be one connection here and a drive through and around and one connection point to Huntington, if this is the supporting that project. And also, you know, limited parking for people driving in from other parts of town, but ideally a lot of pedestrian connections.
Oh, sure.
And also get back to that colorful site, the colorful plan. There's lots of colors, right? Probably like the third slide.
So upon review of the staff report, we looked at the plans and were able, I'm going to grab this also. I think ideally we'll use this one up here, but if I have to, I'll point to this one also. Just wanted to talk about what we did in response to the staff report. So let's see. There's a few things. Up in this corner here, there's sewer infrastructure
Sewer infrastructure, no, water infrastructure.
Yeah, water behind that.
Correct. And so the plan is to relocate that sewer infrastructure and clearly make. So over in this, or up here, sorry, for a force sewer main, correct? Let's check out this in the civil. That's the force sewer main. And those lots are long lots. They're over 100 feet in depth. And so they're potentially buildable as is with the easement in place. So as we proceed towards design, what the buildings will look like, houses will look like, there's a potential, one, that they could stay and be built on as is with an easement. Another option is that the sewer could be relocated into the ODOT right-of-way footprint. So there's some options there, and the easement is shown, it exists, and it preserves that infrastructure. Let's see, also a water connection from here to here. We've proposed this little 30-foot wide fire access. So there's a fire connection there in addition to a walkway. And also that's where a sewer, a water connection could happen. So instead of the alley that was proposed in that area, we're proposing that connection and flag lots, so that each of the lots is abutting a street. Let's see. Here. And then the only other item is adding a pedestrian connection and a water connect stub down to Victory Way. So instead of, we're not proposing full street extensions, and we have our traffic engineer who's going to get up and talk about the, but those are the main changes that we've made to address staff's initial comments.
Can go back to the other set of slides, which is the green set of slides. All right, next slide, please.
Can I clarify something?
Yes.
We all have a vote this, so I would say make sure we all
think it's okay. No, I'm sorry. So the last item that we okay. So back to the background. We've been at this for a while. We've worked through changing the zone in the northwest corner. We've modified the code with a very clear intent to carry out this concept plan. We made all of the code changes that were necessary to carry out this concept plan. And our original plan very clearly said the request was that the Eastern Perimeter Street would and could be established through quadrant planning process. That was very specific in our request, understanding that the code was presented to the Planning Commission and presented to the City Council with that concept and with that general understanding. And so that's where, if the language doesn't allow for that now, it's, I would say, inconsistent with what we have understood and what we have presented. So let's see, we had a hearing on those prior changes. We had hearings before the Planning Commission, we had a hearing before the City Council also. Ultimately approved the code changes and the comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change. Sorry, the color here. So what I've done, I don't know that we need to run through this because of the thorough job that Tammy did, but just went through, you know, there's development standards within the code and there's approval criteria within the code. So I just laid out what are all the approval criteria. I didn't go through, all the development standards. Tammy has gone through both the development standards and the approval criteria. So this is, I would say, redundant, but if you'd like me to, I can walk through each of these criteria. But I think it is redundant for what Tammy has already done. Next slides. And that's really what I do throughout this. We have the approval criteria for the quadrant plan, and then there's also specific approval criteria that are established for the subdivision. So rather than jumping into that, I think that I'd like to turn it over to Joe Bestman, Transite Consulting. He's our traffic engineer. So a lot of time and energy and effort into studying the connections.
the record, Joe Bestman with Transite Consulting, the traffic engineer, 61271 Splendor Lane in Bend, Oregon. So first, I just want to just start by thanking staff. They did a really good job, and there's a lot more work behind the scenes. So again, very thorough. I think the key issue here that we still have that's not fully resolved is this issue of the street connectivity. And on that issue, I believe staff has cited all the right criteria, all the right policies, all the right codes, and they come up with a different conclusion than what our team believes. I think that we have some flexibility in how we look at these codes. What the county adopted and then repealed within the Newberry neighborhood shouldn't have to dictate what we do here within this city, this urban development. I think we have a lot more flexibility in looking at this code to really balance safety, livability, and the neighborhood development. And that's what I'm going to try and walk through here today.
It's not really.
Let me just start while we try and work out the slides. So I think, first of all, what you guys have seen was that figure that shows kind of the black and white squiggly line showing what this quadrant street plan looks like. And what I want to really point out on that plan is that this perimeter collector road that goes along the east side, along the highway frontage, what that was really intended to do was to say, no, you're not going to have new access points on the Highway 97. We're going to keep the impacts west towards Huntington Road. Well, perfect. What's important to highlight on that street plan that the county had adopted was that the perimeter collector was never intended to go all the way up to Burgess Road and all the way down to First Street. It was supposed to loop back into Crescent Creek Road. And why that's important for this planning commission to understand is that it's not providing additional north-south capacity. If all the traffic comes back onto a single street, that single street, Crescent Creek Drive, really dictates how much north-south capacity is being provided in this area. So that's what I really wanted to highlight on the second slide. You can shift over to the next one. And that shows it, but we've talked through this, so let's go ahead and go to the next slide. So what we have here, and this is a little bit difficult to see, but hopefully you can see there's a lot of different lines going north, going south, going through this project. The yellow lines are showing pedestrian-only connections. The red lines are showing streets, and those streets have some type of pedestrian facility, whether it's a 10-foot wide multi-use path, an 8-foot wide multi-use path, they have some type of pedestrian accommodations on them. So what we have here is a very well-connected system of streets. In fact, we've got two connections going to the north, Crescent Creek Drive that extends in that north-south alignment, the Fordham Drive connection that aligns directly with Polish's Crescent Creek connection. Over on the east side, we've purposely excluded that eastern connection, and as Greg had mentioned, we have a 30-foot wide easement with 20 feet of pavement, enough to satisfy fire access, with a bollard in the middle, so that pedestrians can walk around that and go between neighborhoods without out-of-direction travel. We have this new multi-use path along the side of US 97, which was a priority identified in the city's transportation system plan to implement. And we've got three new connections to that pathway at different intervals throughout our site. As of yesterday, we've made additional site plan changes to really try and realign some of these pathways to get back to the intent of what that perimeter collector was originally doing, of bringing traffic and pedestrians north-south on the eastern edge. And so I think what we've shown here with this circulation plan is we can accomplish the same thing. We can serve the same functional purpose. We can meet all the goals of what was in the Newberry neighborhood plan. But there's some real benefits and trade-offs of what we're showing, and I'll walk through those. So on the next slide, it talks about the purpose. And really, what this slide shows you is a photo of Crescent Creek Drive through the Polish neighborhood. And Crescent Creek Drive is a bit unique. It doesn't have driveways that access directly onto that street. You know, so you don't have the kids that are playing in the front yard spilling into the street as much. There's bays for parking along that street for visitors and guests. But it's not a street that the residents are parking in on a daily basis. If you contrast that with the road we have on our eastern side, it's narrower. It does have the direct driveway access points. It does have the kid yards. And so what we want to make sure we do is really protect that area, keep that area safe, and allow the speeds to be lower, the volumes to be lower. That's really the purpose and the goal of not having these connections. But again, this isn't a street that goes all the way through, so we're not changing the function of that road. Next slide, please. So
So what I want to show you is how we can get to yes. Again, staff has told you how to get to no, and that's certainly justifiable as well. But I think there's a path to yes, and it's really a matter of balancing the vision, the livability, and the safety with some of these other circulation and access policies. So in the transportation system plan, there's really two goals that pertain. The top one talks about safety. And I think we've already talked enough about why this is safer. You know, we're trying to reduce the speeds and those conflict points. We have the fire access point on the northeast side to provide the life safety. And we connect to those other developable lands. The developable lands that surround us to the south, to the north, have streets that serve those roads. They have the utilities that connect to them. We're not landlocking anybody with this plan. So I think the first goal in the transportation system plan is met. Similarly, if you look at the second goal of the transportation system plan, I'm talking about providing a range of travel options for all different travel modes. Certainly with our connectivity and our system of pathways and streets, we meet that goal. And what I want to highlight, though, is not only do we meet that goal, but we provide connections to the commercial area. We provide connections to the parks. And we provide connections to the neighborhood schools with this system of streets. So for people walking, they have that direct connectivity that we're striving to create here. Next slide, please. And talk about a local street, because what's really confusing is in the Newberry neighborhood plan, everything's a collector. It's a perimeter collector. It's a central collector. It's a collector. Well, those aren't collectors in the sense of what's in your functional classification system in the transportation system plan. All these streets are local streets. Now, they do have different functions within that classification, but why that's important is it gives you a lot more flexibility in how you connect those streets and where you place those. But a local street is really intended to provide direct access to land, shorter trips, lower speeds. That's the purpose. And if you think about a local street, the way local streets are designed is to carry up to 1,000 cars a day. That sounds like a really big number, and that translates to about a car every 30 seconds. The way we've designed this Eastern Street, serving 50 homes with two east-west connections, brings that down to one car every 2.5 minutes. And that's going back to the purpose of what we're trying to create with this street circulation plan. In the transportation system plan too, there's a lot of other goals that talk about neighborhood traffic management, and this is the balance, right? We want to have those lower speeds, and so some of the treatments they talk about is allowing on-street parking. You know, this is a treatment that we're including within our subdivision. Curb bulbouts. We're meeting the intent of this with parking bays along Crescent Creek Drive that go away into your corner so that the crossings stay short and drivers have that sense of the road getting narrow, you know, just to maintain those speeds on the different roads. Landscaping is provided throughout. The TSP also identifies partial street closures, and again, that's what we're trying to do. But in the TSP, they talk about the pros and cons of partial street closures. They say, look, if you close streets, the problem is you put more traffic on other roads. Well, again, we have a street with the direct driveways on it, with, you know, the yards that front that street. We're intentionally trying to move that traffic to Crescent Creek, which provides that long-term north-south connection and gets traffic off of Huntington Road and actually connects. So what the con is in the TSP is actually the intent of our plan. But again, these are all strategies that are identified in the adopted plans. Next slide. Just as advice, there's a lot of different codes or a lot of different texts in the development code that talks about street connectivity and circulation. The pedestrian access and circulation section 1588050 basically says make it direct, make it accessible, you know, make it work, right? And again, that code is clearly met. Next slide. The next section, 15.90.070, make sure I have this all correct in my head. So this one says the overall street system shall assure an adequate traffic circulation system with intersection angles, grades, tangents, and curves appropriate for the traffic. I believe we provide this, and I believe staff agrees with that. It then goes on to say the location, width, and grade of streets shall be considered in their relationship to existing and planned streets, to topographical conditions, to public convenience and safety, and to the proposed use or development to be served thereby. And again, that's where we're trying to balance our street design and our connectivity. Next slide, please. Street location and pattern. And I'm gonna flip around the order, not that these are super easy to read for anyone, but the last bullet says, they must conform to the adopted Lapine Transportation System Plan. Well, there's nothing specific in the Lapine Transportation System Plan to these connections, other than the policies that we've already discussed, we've already shown that we adhere to. The second one says, conform to a plan for the general area of the development approved by the city to meet a particular situation. And I think with the safety and connectivity, we do that. And the final one says, provide for the continuation or appropriate projection of existing principal streets in surrounding areas. So I try to understand, what is a principal street? There's no definition in your code that I can find of what a principal street is. So my assumption is that refers to your collectors and your arterials, your higher order streets. And if you go to the next slide here, what this shows you is that same tax law map of the future platted subdivision phase, and it shows you Campfire Drive over on the east side, which follows that perimeter collector. The same issue is present on the street that's platted that we have with ours, and that the lots directly front onto that street once again, and it's being designed to a narrower standard. So again, I think if we look at this as a principal street, I think that's really a stretch of the definition, and I don't think that code applies. 1590070 talks about future street extensions, and it says, where necessary to give access to or permit future subdivision or development of adjoining lands, streets shall be extended to the boundary of the proposed development or subdivision. Again, we're avoiding landlocking parcels. We connect to all of them, we serve all of them. It goes on to say, where a subdivision is proposed adjacent to other developable land, a future street plan shall be filed by the applicant. And that was filed yesterday. So that's now included in your packet. And really, it's this red and yellow system of lines that we're saying, this is the street plan that we want to replace that figure 15 from the Newberry neighborhood plan with. We think this is a better street system than what the county approved and Lapine adopted by reference. And then it goes on further to say, wherever appropriate, street stubs shall be provided to allow access to future abutting subdivisions and to logically extend the street system into the surrounding area. Again, wherever appropriate. And that goes back to your discretion of whether or not this street stub is appropriate, given the trade-offs that we're looking at. Next slide. And finally, there's a lot more text in the standards and specifications that talks about to and through and extending along rights of way and easements. Again, Fordham, the streets that actually have the right of way, those are being extended. There are no street stubs that connect into our property. So I again believe that we have that flexibility to modify the street plan to omit those connections. I believe that's within staff's discretion to make that decision, or I'm sorry, the planning commission's discretion to make that recommendation to council. We've been talking to ODOT. They've had this application for quite some time, and some initial comments yesterday and some additional comments today. Really, the crux of the issue is the intersection where ODOT had the overcrossing planned and funded, obviously longer viable, and they're looking to see, you know, what other funding mechanisms they can get from nearby development. What I talked to ODOT about is, yeah, we're willing to work with you, we're willing to come up with a solution, but really, ODOT, this is a regional issue. These are major roads that connect to significant lands well outside the city of Lapine. And really, the only equitable way to look at this is to figure out what type of regional funding mechanism, whether it's part of the Deschutes County System Development Charge or the Lapine System Development Charge, in combination with ODOT funding, to provide an improvement of that scale and magnitude. Obviously, the first project was $17 million. That project was fully funded by the public. Now we're here and we have no project and have no money again. So again, is it this development's onus to repair that? There's an impact there. There's absolutely a need to provide connectivity to the 97 corridor that's critical to the region. What I told ODOT is I want to make sure it's equitable for all parties. And really that concludes my very long spiel on transportation. I'm happy to answer questions and go into more details if it's necessary. There's no continuation of Campfire. What we're showing here is just having our multi-use path that comes down. Path would then connect over to the new US 97 multi-use path, but we would not be providing a street stub over here. It's a loop, and that traffic would go back to Memorial to make it back onto Crescent Creek Drive. No. It'll be a removable bollard.
Yeah.
For questions for me, I'll turn it over to Vic and let him speak a little bit further about.
For the record, my name is Vic Russell, and my wife and I are the project owners and developers. I want to start with a quote from Mark Twain, and back to what Vicki and I's vision is here, but let's try real hard not to communicate, but have a real conversation. My vision for this property, I'd like to go to that, if I could get that, was to build a safe, healthy neighborhood for families. We're in a close proximity to the schools. We purposely didn't want collector streets running through the neighborhoods. You've got Crescent Creek already there. There are no driveways coming in and off Crescent Creek. They're all off the interior streets. The proposal that your staff wants, primarily from the engineer, from his understanding, is to run a through street from the north through the south. All of those driveways will be coming on to that street, completely going away from my vision of building neighborhoods that are safe for kids to play and to walk. We extended the amount of paths, open space that's required. Can't say it enough. And then to my chagrin, today ODOT threw this damn open hearings deal in where we can't make a decision. And you've got bureaucracies that always have their hand out, and we don't mind doing our part. But I want to challenge you guys at the commission to look ahead 20 years from now or 10 years from now. Do you want what Bend has and Redmond has, what your city engineer thinks his interpretation is, or do you want something that you can be proud of and be unique? I'm very passionate about this. It's going to go ahead one way or the other. But I just think we have put together a team of professionals that are second to none. Their expertise has been a very positive experience for me to work with professionals and add support, because we, none of us, want to develop anything that is not safe. And the reason, we've had some concern about the clearing we've had. We purposely have done the clearing. We're going to add back in and plant trees. I want color in there. We're going to add some more ponderosa trees. You look what's happened in Northern California. We're building not only a traffic safe, but a fire safe community that will be here for whenever. I appreciate your time. I really appreciate staff's time. They've been good to work with. We wanted to break ground March 11th. That's been stopped tonight. So hopefully ODOT will get off their butt and make a decision.
Could you come up here so we can get it on recording?
Questions were already answered, but
this
is Carl Maceres, the wife, Sarah. Okay. I'm in Crescent Creek right now on Fordham Drive.
I just want to make sure we can get it on the recording for everybody to hear.
I said most of my questions were answered with the presentations, but my concern was the additional traffic, and I don't think that was addressed. Because there's quite a bit of traffic, usually too fast. But then the question about replanting the trees.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All right. And I just will get it over with.
We know that's
it. Don't talk traffic all night, as long as you want to listen. Again, for the record, Joe Vestman, Transite Consulting. So yeah, traffic on Huntington is definitely picking up, and there's a few reasons for that. It's 97 corridor. The opportunities here, the first strategy is really to get Huntington Road to a three-lane section. With the new left turn lanes that are being constructed at Memorial Drive, that's going to complete a pretty good three-lane section of Huntington Road, so that then you have the left turn lanes to separate out those turning and the through vehicles. That really improves the capacity of that street system, but it's still a fast road. And really what needs to happen is more urbanization, you know, more development. Right now, as long as there's no roadside development, there's not the activity, everything is set back, people are gonna treat it like a rural highway. The other thing, and I have the city about this, is long-term, you know, looking at new connections between Huntington Road and 97, so all the traffic doesn't have to keep going north-south up to Burgess, but has some outlets in the middle. I think there's some real benefits in what you can do with the US 97 corridor, which is now within the city limits, as well as what you can do with Huntington Road. I think as you look to the future and you look at, you know, maybe it's new treatments like roundabouts, if I dare say it, somewhere on Huntington Road.
you know, bringing traffic down to that 20-mile-an-hour speed, navigating that circle really keeps those speeds in much better compliance. But I think where Lapine is looking to go is to make that into a 35-mile-an-hour street, not the 45-plus street that it is now. But as far as carrying capacity, the capacity is still easily adequate. The only points of any real congestion are at the 97 corridor at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to touch on
what? The left turn lane at Memorial goes in with the 91st home, and so that'll provide, again, that continuous three-lane section up past the clinic.
Right. That's the blocks there, right, on the west. Waiting for some development to slide over by the clinic.
And that is a priority project in your transportation system plan, is the urbanization. Not having the system development charges and those types of funding mechanism does make it more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you.
She just needs to after I get done.
Living Crescent Creek. Our address is on Hollinshead Place, but our house faces Crescent Creek. So I didn't have a good view of the maps here. Am I confused? Is traffic from the new neighborhood going to travel onto Crescent Creek and north or south, as the case may be, on Crescent Creek over to, from toward the park?
I'll just stay up here. Yeah, so the plan is to take Crescent Creek all the way through the Bluewood Avenue alignment, way up through this new development into Crescent Creek. Near term, the benefit is from your guys' neighborhood. Really, you can filter back down south, get down to First Street without making that left-hand turn onto Huntington. Longer term, Crescent Creek is supposed to be this new north-south central collector that goes all the way up to Burgess.
Meantime, also, traveling north Crescent Creek, you turn left on Finley, you're gonna go north on Huntington. Huntington is off camber from east to west. You slip a little bit and on collision.
Yeah, it's under our county.
Okay. And so is Crescent Creek a neighborhood road or is that a city road?
That's a city road.
That is a city road. Limit signs through there, especially when it goes all the way out to Burgess. I mean, if they're going to be moving too fast on Huntington.
Unfortunately, there are speed limits out there. We can only reduce. People have real problems getting out of their driveways.
On Crescent Creek, that'd be a residential neighborhood, so it'd be no higher than 25.
So you have a
restrict a lot more on Crescent Creek than we can on Huntington.
Okay. On Crescent Creek, you can do speed calming, you can do tables, right, you can do whatever you need to do, and you can have a statutory speed of 25 miles.
Water and sewer to handle this.
To that written request, too, the public works manager gave his
now expanding another.
Is at this point. Well, I'll touch a little bit on the ODOT request. Okay, great, yeah. Make sure y'all public testimony we can get. I think this is also a good opportunity to ask any more questions you have of staff. We have obviously a lot of details in here that we did not even scratch the surface of. So if there are any questions, it'd be a good time to ask questions of staff, of the applicant, since they've got the whole team here. I believe traffic engineer has to head out in about 20 minutes. So if there's any more traffic questions for him, just want to make sure we make use of everybody's time while we're here. While we're getting this additional public testimony form filled out, yes, ODOT did officially request that the record remain open. What that means by Lapine code is if somebody requests it to remain open, Planning Commission is required to keep it open for 14 days. So that's 7 days record open, 7 days for rebuttal. Typically you see 21777, so an additional 7 days for applicant final, but they have the ability to waive those final 7 days, and we can hear from them on that if that's what they choose to do. To my knowledge, that the ODOT request was not rescinded. It was a late in the day request this afternoon, so I conferred with the city attorney and that does stand. We don't have any other option other than to keep the record open those additional 14 days. So I'll get back to logistics of that after we hear our next testimony.
Yes. My name's Dean Sathram, and I live on Fordham Drive in the Crescent Creek Edition. So two questions. The first one is, if this is approved, what would be the timeline for phase one as far as like a start and finish date? And then my second question is, the idea of on-street parking kind of bothers me. In Fordham Drive, the on-street parking is allowed for very short term, like an overnight or 2 days, maybe like if you had a visitor. But overall, people aren't allowed to park on the street, like an everyday thing. In different neighborhoods that I've been in, Lapine and elsewhere, once people start parking on the streets, it really looks kind of cluttered and ugly to me, but I just wanted to throw that out.
Very good. As far as timelines go.
I can respond to that just from the application perspective, unless the applicant wants to say something, but the first phase is required to be added within the first 2 years. I believe it is the applicant's intent to begin construction as soon as possible. And then the full project, it has a 5-year duration of approval, although they can apply for extensions, so it could, you know, foreseeably be, I think, possibly 8 years. Regarding the parking on street and the duration of time that somebody can park on street, the city code doesn't mandate that timing, but that probably comes down to your HOA agreements, and I think that they, you know, if the applicant chooses to, they can respond to that. If they know, right now they're only required to have draft covenants in place for their HOA, and I don't know if that's something that's been considered or not, but it's something that's kind of outside of our city process, because we don't mandate that. But I think your comment will be noted in the applicant's here.
Paul Lish is currently building houses in the back of the Crescent Creek area, and that construction has caused a lot of extra traffic too, so that's just another thing to consider.
I know that's another 50 units going out there. So
right. A lot of...
Unfortunately, there is, oh, it seems to be a lot of it concentrated right around the meadows now. But they just going to be more and more difficult as moving. And unfortunately, there...
Another thing, and then I'll shut up. I live just off of Findlay. So the traffic behind my house is Findlay Drive, and with all the construction that's going on, they've limited, or they requested that all the construction people use Findlay. So there's trucks and big trucks and gravel trucks and stuff going by all day long, and a lot of the workers go way faster than the speed limit.
That you can call the...
Another question about the on-street parking, that is only intended for visitors, it's not intended for long...
Project manager, to the point about when we want to start, we'd like to start as soon as possible. March 11th was a date that we had hoped, and be done with the development in 90 days, and then be selling the lots platted and such with by the end of the year, and then have the building done, hopefully in 2021 finished. And then our CCNRs will have the residents parking in the driveway or in the garages, and then the visitors on the street, similar to Crescent Creek.
I assumed that, but I didn't want to speak for you.
For staff, on staff report, on design details, city engineer is here. If there's any specific questions for Eric, or questions for the applicant. Obviously, the applicant and staff have presented you with the same criteria with different conclusions, particularly related to the north and south extensions. If there's any questions about that, this would be a good time for it. Otherwise, we do have to keep the record open. On that note, while you ponder, if you have any questions, we have two options with keeping the record open. We have an open hearing right now. You can continue the hearing if you want to continue receiving oral testimony at the next meeting. Or you can close the hearing but keep the record open, meaning that you can receive written comments after the hearing is closed. And that's your choice. The request was to keep the record open. If you want to keep the hearing open, you may do so and continue the conversation and have additional testimony at the next meeting. We do need to set the date and time certain tonight, and I believe Tracy has some options of dates for us to look at while we finish our discussion.
As far as which way do I go?
That was the code you gave me to enforce, so.
I know.
So I would, just to be formal, if you could formalize that in a motion and a vote, that'd be great.
I'd make a motion to close the hearing.
And is that for a, if we can pause on that for a minute and ask the applicant if they want to waive their additional 7 days? So we can do 14 days is what we're required to do. 21 days is courtesy to give the applicant the final rebuttal. If you want to waive that final 7 days to keep it only 14, you may.
Can we have just 1 minute?
Absolutely.
So Tammy, we would request that we keep the final rebuttal, but if we get to the end of it, I have no idea.
I think that is a fair request, absolutely. What I just need to do, I guess, is regroup on the dates of the hearing. Because if you only have the 14, we want to try and get you a meeting as soon as possible so we don't burn those extra 7. I don't have a problem with that, though, as far as you waiving it later. So why don't we... I guess, Laura, I would ask for your input on this, too. Because we need to set the time and date certain tonight for the next hearing, I believe. Well, we're not continuing the hearing. We're just keeping the record open. I'm going to retract that. We're just keeping the record open. Since we're not continuing the hearing, we don't have to have a date. So let's do that. Let's if that's okay with Planning Commission, if we do a 21-day record extension, and at any point, if they want to retract that final 7 days, we'll see if we can pull off a meeting sooner than later. And then that gives us some time to get that date figured out in the next day or two.
Over anyway.
Yes, you do.
I mean, that's just already, aside from whatever I'm writing on. So,
okay.
Point of clarification, I'm a new commissioner. If you have a 14-day open hearing, do you not set that date? And if they want the 7-day period of rebuttal, you set for that?
Well, in this case, I think what is being...
Because it's closed, yeah.
You, exactly. It sounds like the vote was to, or the motion at least, was to close the hearing and keep the record open. So since we're closing the hearing, we don't have to set that date right now. If we were keeping it open, we would need to set that date. So I agree with you on the timing if, you know, to maximize it. If we have a 14-day period, it would be great to have the second meeting where you deliberate and decide 14 days, but we want to keep it flexible right now, I think, and keep it at the 21, and I'll confer with staff to figure out how we set that date then.
Does that not give them 7 extra days of open stuff as opposed to only the applicant's 7 days? I don't understand it, please.
Sure, so the 21 days, is that what you're asking about?
I'm wondering why it's 21, if they decide they want to have the rebuttal period after.
Right, yeah. So courtesy is very typical to offer that 21 days, so they do have that additional rebuttal time. Sometimes they don't need it, though,
okay.
So they can waive it, yeah. So I guess... If we could revise the motion, if that's possible, or maybe retract it and revise it to include the 21-day open record period, that would be great.
Yeah, so I retract the original motion. I now make a motion.
21 days.
21
days. We call it 777.
21 days.
Wait. Clarification, sorry.
Yeah, if I could, I think it's important. We don't want the record to remain open for 21 days.
That's
right.
The problem.
Specific to know that
what
7 means. So it's 7. So it is a total period of 7 of 21 days. There's 7 days for new evidence. So for 7 days, anybody can submit new evidence. ODOT, us, whomever. And then the second 7 days is considered a rebuttal time period. So the only new evidence that's provided during that time is in response to new evidence into the record. And then that final 20, so that final 7 days is the applicant's rebuttal, final comments.
Thank you for that clarification.
That's our understanding.
Sorry, and I know there's a question.
Request too, so that was.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let's just have a clarification to the 21 being the 777, 7 days being the open record. Correct.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so we will get a date figured out as quickly as we possibly can in the next day or two. Just keep the communication open. If you hear something about ODOT, you can share with us, vice versa. We'll just keep the information flowing. In the meantime, if there are any questions for staff, let me know. I would just continue to caution staff, commission on quasi-judicial conversations and ex parte contacts. So a decision to be made. Thank you all. Appreciate everybody's time and patience.
Now, the one final thing that we still have here.
I nominate Russ again. Thank you. I'm hard to find. Russ?
You continue.